Welcome to Fin and Feather, interview and commentary about outdoor activities in the Sitka area. My name is Eric Jordan, and my guest today for the next half hour is Herb Savico. We all know him as Hap. Herb fished in southeast Alaska, was really one of the pioneers in the troll fishery, weren't you, Herb?
Yes, I was.
And we're going to talk about trolling, and the theme is going to be, I have to say, Pacific Fishing had an article this week, and on the cover they said, trolling, paradise lost. And it was one of the great things about this country. Trolling was a great way to make a living, and we're going to talk a little bit about that with Hap. And part of the reason he's on tonight, I was out fishing the last couple of days, and I was doing, wasn't catching many. Actually, I caught two fish in 2 days. But one of the ones I caught yesterday was a nice fish, and it was quite a struggle. And I was thinking of what a magnificent species they are and what a magnificent fishery this has been for a lot of people over the years. And I was thinking of sharing that with listeners tonight, and I couldn't think of anybody better than Hap. He's retired. When did you retire from trolling, Hap?
Well, I'd retired with the boat, you know, in 1990.
Uh-huh. Just for the last couple years, and I thought I'd we'd talk about the Alaska troll fishery for a while. Hap, tell us about, I understood your parents came to Alaska in 1906, is that right?
That's correct, yes.
Uh-huh. Where did they come from?
My mother came from Finland. My dad was already in America. He came in 1901, and he was in Michigan. But then he came to Juneau, or Douglas, in 1906. Then my mother and dad got married.
Uh-huh. Well, what brought him to Douglas?
Well, I don't know. My dad, he just wanted to get away from Finland. And he came to this country and went to work in mines in Michigan.
Uh-huh. Were things tough in Finland then?
No, I don't think they were tough, but he just wanted to get away from them. They wanted to come to America.
Uh-huh. And then he called back for your mother.
No, he didn't call. She came to Douglas in 1906. And she had a job. She was promised a job when she came to America.
Oh, so they didn't know each other in Finland?
No, they didn't know each other. No, she came from Finland.
Uh-huh.
Called now Haapajärvi.
Uh-huh.
And she came from Finland in 1906. And she had another woman traveling with her who knew how to talk English. So she got away all the way to Alaska. And then she had this job waiting for her when she got to Douglas.
Uh-huh.
And that was with a grocery store. And the name was Fox. Mr. Fox, he ran the grocery store there in Douglas on the main drag there. And she was just like a maid for the whole family.
Uh-huh, I see. And that's when the Treadwell Mine was going full bore.
Yes, that's right.
It
was going full bore at that time.
Uh-huh. And so they were married in 1906. We're living in Douglas. When were you born?
Yeah. I was born in Wilson Cove.
Wilson Cove, that's on Admiralty Island, right?
That's right, yeah, 1910.
Uh-huh. Well, what's the story behind you being born in Wilson Cove? I've never had anybody on this show that's born in Wilson Cove before. And in fact, I didn't know that.
Yeah, my dad was a hand logger, and he went with a couple of Finnish friends. They went to now Wilson Cove, and they hand logged there. And my dad built a cabin, log cabin there, and a steam bath, which all Finns have is a steam bath. And then they now lived there for quite a few years. I was born there 1910, March 15th, 1910.
Uh-huh. Well, was there any, of course, you weren't born in a hospital or anything? Was there a little community there?
No, there was no community. No, just my mother and my dad, and Walter was the youngest. Walter was born already. He was a year older than I was. He was already born.
Uh-huh.
Then I was born in Wilson Cove on March 15th.
Uh-huh. For those of you who may not know, Wilson Cove is on the southwest side of Admiralty Island.
Yes.
It's between Angoon and Point Gardner. Closer to Point Gardner. And that's a real tough place to get in and out of there.
A hard place to get out of.
Uh-huh. Your dad must not have kept a boat there, or did he keep it up on the beach?
Well, he didn't have a boat. They had a boat. They rowed the boat. They had a 22-foot rowboat. And had two sets of oars, and they rode to Douglas and Juneau from Douglas all the way to Wilson Cove, you know, and took them about a day and a half to row out there. Two men rowing. The boat was 22 foot long.
Uh-huh. Wow, that's an amazing story in itself.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And did you grow up in Wilson Cove then? How long
We were only there a couple of years, and then my dad was gone to Douglas. They went with a tugboat and brought some logs there. And then when he came back, in the meantime, the house set a fire. The log cabin set a fire. My mother had another lady with her. And now the house burned down, and I was small, and Walter was small, and this lady had a baby, too, a young feller, too. So they lived on the beach there for a day or two, and they kept the fire going, and some boat came from Taiyi, you know, and happened to see that there was some smoke coming up there, and they went in, and they picked them up and brought them to Taiyi.
So when your dad came back, he got to Wilson Cove, and the cabin was burned down, and nobody was there. Did they left a note, or...?
Well, they must have left some kind of a note there, because my dad came to Taiyi and brought us to Douglas. Then
Well, where were the logs going? Where were the logs marketed?
Douglas now Lumber Company. They had a sawmill there in Douglas.
So it was used to provide lumber for the mines and the housing and stuff in Juneau.
Yeah, and it was for lumber, too, you know. They had some real big logs. They hand-logged. He's one of the first hand loggers in the country, I think.
Oh, yeah. You know, there's a great book for the listeners out there. I don't know if you ever read it, Hap, called Hand Logger Jackson.
I read it. I read the book. It was
Do you remember the author of that?
I don't remember the author.
I can't quite remember the author either, but it's about hand logging in the southern part of Southeast, mostly out of Ketchikan.
Yeah, that's right.
But for any of you that might be interested in, if this stimulated your interest in the way things used to be in Southeast Alaska, that's a great book on hand logging.
Yes, I read the book.
Also a little bit about trout fishing and stuff. So, okay, you moved from Wilson Cove back into Douglas.
Yes.
And what got you into the fishing industry, Hap?
Well, I had some Finnish friends, you know, that they were all older than I was, you know, and they were hand trollers. And they said, you should try trolling. And my dad, we built a boat in 1926, and we hand-logged that, too, you know. We cut the tree down and whip-sawed the lumber out and made the...
With hand saws, too.
With regular whip saw.
Right, right.
And then we made the keel. We cut the keel out of a now great big yellow cedar. And whipped the keel out, and the bow stem and the stern post were both natural crooks. Then when we got the lumber to Douglas, then my dad had the lumber planed, you know.
Why don't you explain what a natural crook is? That's not what we think about when we think of a natural crook these days. We usually think of a thief, but explain what that
was. No, a natural crook is a piece of timber, you know, that's got regular... a bend to it like that, like a crook, you know. So they called it they made bow stems and stern posts out of it.
Right, like down in the roots of a tree.
Yeah, that's right,
in
the roots of the tree, yes.
Uh-huh.
And they cut them out, and then they made a natural, they called that a natural crook.
Uh-huh.
And they made the bow stem out of that, and then the stern post the same way.
And this was yellow cedar, was most of the planking?
It was mostly yellow cedar, yeah. The planking was not yellow cedar. The planking was now spruce.
Oh, okay. You made, so what was yellow cedar?
The stern post and the bow stem and then the keel.
So it took some artistry to make your own boat.
Oh, yes, it did. My dad was real good at anything. It wasn't the thing that he couldn't do. That's one thing I'll say for him.
And working with woods was one of the things.
Well, he was sure good at it. Yes.
So you built your own boat. This is a 26-foot boat, and some of your friends were hand trolling.
Yes, and then I started power trolling with Walter. My brother was a year older than I. We went to Taiyi then. I fished in 1926 with my dad with a boat in the fall.
Okay, now what was the gear like? You had this 26-foot boat. What did you have for power?
I had a 6-horsepower Imperial engine in there, open base.
What's that mean? I mean, I don't even know what this means.
Well, it's a single cylinder, you know. It's just a single cylinder, and then had an open base where the oil would, you know, and then had cover over the base, you know. The oil would splash around on the crankshaft. And it was a real nice running engine. You had to crank it by hand. It had a big flywheel on it. The flywheel was about a 26-inch flywheel. Then you had to spin the flywheel to get the engine started.
I see.
Yes.
And it ran on gasoline, of course.
Yes, it ran on gasoline.
And what did it sound like?
Oh, chug, chug, chug. You know, it didn't fire very often. It only made about 400 revolutions at full speed. That's all the engine turned, and that was a natural, just a regular clutch on it, and just had one drive to it, just a direct drive.
So what did you do when you wanted to reverse or something?
Well, it had a clutch on it, all right, but you could run the clutch in, you know, push it in, and just like I've got out in Belgium, I had the same doggone thing.
See.
I had a clutch handle.
Okay, so you had this, is that what they called a one-lunger or
single-lunger?
One-lunger, single. So you had that in your boat, and you took off, and how fast did you travel from Douglas?
Oh, that little boat traveled 7 miles an hour. It's hard to believe. It had a big wheel on it, though, 20 by 20, you know.
Well, what kind of gear did you have for trolling?
We had now cotton lines.
What's that mean?
Well, cotton line was, that's what you had, just like you have your leaders, you know, or nylon or monofilament or the other.
Did you have the regular trolling poles and leads and stuff?
Yeah, we had poles, but they were in the middle of the boat. And then you had a bracket that you dropped the pole down into. And then you had guy lines to guy line the poles, you know.
To keep them down.
Yes.
And how long were your poles?
Oh, they were about the same length as the boat was, 26 foot long.
And then how many lines did you run off of your poles?
We ran just the two lines.
I see.
Yes.
And you had cotton was your main
cotton
line?
Cotton line, yeah. We had three leads on the, if we fished down 20 fathoms, we'd have a 10-pound lead on the bottom. Then we'd have a 20-pound lead on the bottom on the bow lines. And we didn't fish, you know, those years we didn't fish down very deep. 20 fathoms was about as deep as we went because they said there was no fish down deeper because nobody had done much fishing deeper, you know.
Well, how did you get, did you have regular cranks, kind of crank to crank up the line or?
No, we had regular, a gurdy. My dad made a gurdy, you know, just out of like, just, you know, like you have those spools that you have on the deck of a boat. You know, they're just about 4 inches, 5 inches across. And then we had a shaft and a brake, a clutch handle on the shaft. You could shove it in and out.
So
and
it
he
was
made
a,
the, he made everything, you know. He made
so
the
is this a power takeoff off of your engine?
Off the engine, yes.
I see.
And it was a flat belt that drove the shaft.
So he made his own girdies then?
Oh, he made his own girdies, yes.
Now, what did he make them out of? Were they out of brass or?
No, they were made out of now steel, but they were now galvanized.
I see.
They're just exactly the same as you have on the deck of a boat when you have the, you know, where you put the, you put that on deck and then a pipe goes through it, you know.
I see.
And then now he made the doggone, the whole thing, and I could pull up the lines to the first lead, and then I had to pull the rest by hand.
I see.
Because we had three leads for the main lines.
I see.
Yes.
And how many leaders did you have?
Oh, we only had, if there was three leads, we had three leaders is all we had.
I see.
Yeah.
I see.
And then we had swivels on the leaders, you know.
What was the fishing like? Tell me about the first day you said you took off from Douglas and went down to Taiyi. Tell me about the first day fishing and what Taiyi was like.
Oh, Taiyi was, there was quite a few fishermen there at Taiyi at that time. They were mostly hand trollers. And there were some power trollers from Wranglin, from Ketchikan. But all the boats were small. They were from 24 to 30 foot long. Very few boats over 30 foot.
You know what we used to call them? Remember that name? Puddle jumpers? Do you remember that?
Yeah, they had puddle jumpers. But and these were, you know, hand trolling was different than it is right nowadays because they rowed the boats.
So hand trollers was when you referred to guys who rowed the boats.
Yeah, they rowed the boats.
And power trolling was the guys
had
who
the
had
power engines.
Had,
yeah.
had the engine.
Engines
it didn't refer to the way you cranked up the gear.
No, heck no. No, that was, that's the way it was, you know. You had the power boat and then you had the hand trollers. And they were real hand trollers because they had to row their boats.
Well, you know, Taiyi, I had Jan Straley on here recently, and she was saying that Taiyi used to be a whaling station.
It was a whaling station.
Was it still a whaling station when
when my dad went into there, you know, after the cabin burned down in Wilson Cove, he went there, and it was a whaling station at that time. Yes.
And so when you got there, it was a cold storage zone.
Well, later on, it was a cold storage. When I was fishing out in Taiyi, there was a cold. They had a cold storage there.
And were the fish that you were catching, were they kippered or mild cured or?
They were mild cured at that time.
So it was, they were salted. That's a
they
form
were
of
salted,
salting.
Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't have a freezing plant there then when you first started.
Well, in 27, you know, that's quite a bit difference in 1910.
So, I see.
So they now, cold storage was there already in 1927.
Oh, I see. So when you got there, there was a cold storage.
Yeah, and then there was a fish buyer there also in Surprise Harbor.
I see.
That was Raymond Bell. I don't know if you ever heard about Raymond Bell.
No, I
he
didn't
was
hear
from Cake. He was from Cake. He was a storekeeper in Cake.
And he also bought fish.
And then he brought them over to Cake and mild cured them.
I see.
And they mild cured fish in Taiyi at the same time.
I want to get back to how the gear worked and what the fishing was like, but since we're already talking about it, explain mild curing, because when I started trolling with my father in the 50s, we still mild cured. And in fact, there's a guy living in here, Tommy Thompson, who was excellent at splitting a king salmon and putting it up for mild curing. But tell us what that is.
Well, when you get a king salmon, they usually took the king salmon at that time about 16 pounds and up. Anything that was under 16 pounds, you got a small price for it. But they called a 16-pound king salmon a mild cure. It had to be red, too, when they called it mild cure. And when they mild cured mostly reds, the whites they gave, most of the whites they gave away. You know, they didn't mild cure many whites because they didn't pay the price.
Mm-hmm.
So splitting is quite an art to it, you know. I've split a lot of king salmon. I split some in when I was in Wilson, not in Wilson, I was in Tea Harbor. We had a mild cure plant there. And the feller came from Juneau and split one tierce of king salmon. He let me, said, you try it. And I split quite a few tierces of king salmon after that.
Well, tell us you got this nice big king salmon, yes. And what do you do when you're splitting them and mild curing them?
Well, you've got to have kind of a nail in the board, and you put the head in the nail, you press the head against the nail so it won't slip, you know, and then you got a big long knife. The knife was about 16 inches long, and it's a thick blade on it, but it was sharp as could be. And when you mild cured with that, you had to use a lot of power to go right down you start from the neck and work down the side, and you get the slabs, you know.
Just almost one clean stroke.
Yeah, that's right. One clean stroke, people. Yes.
And the art was, you just feel it as you went.
You feel it, and then you had to cut it so close to the bone that it left a streak on the belly of the fish. It left a white streak on it, and then you had a good mild cure.
Uh-huh. And then
if you missed it and made bumps, you could see that it wasn't a very good slice.
Right, and you wanted to keep your knife real sharp.
Oh, yes,
and
it
you had to have
sharp.
Some momentum.
Yeah, that's right. It was a big knife, and you had to know how to use it.
Uh-huh. And then they put them in barrels and salted them.
That's right, yes.
Uh-huh. And now, where did those fish go to? Who ate those
fish? They went to New York and Chicago, and they shipped them all over, you know, at that time.
Uh-huh. Made them into locks, even
yes.
then. Uh-huh. Well, now tell me about, let's get back to the fishing. You come down to Tyee, and probably not too many whales around at that time. Because
there were a lot of whales around
then. Even though they'd been hunting them.
There was a lot of whales even around then, you know.
Uh-huh.
Because they'd just about quit in 27. They'd quit, you know, killing whales, you know.
I see. And so there was a lot of whales, and there were birds, and a lot of herring around at that time. Uh-huh.
The bays are full of herring.
Uh-huh. So you came down, and tell us about the king salmon fishing. What was the story you heard when you were coming down there, and what was the lure?
When we got down to Surprise Harbor, that was right outside of Tyee there. You know where Surprise Harbor is.
Right. Surprise Harbor is right between, actually, Wilson Cove and Point Gardner.
Yeah, that's right. It's in between there, you know.
Uh-huh.
It's just a little way from now, Tyee.
Uh-huh.
And we anchored there, and then we started fishing with my brother. And then I hand trolled. he was trolling and power trolling. I hand trolled on those now reefs out there, and you could only fish about there was shallow water right there, about 4 to 6 fathoms, and that's where you got the big kings right there.
Were there a lot of kings around?
No, sometimes there was a lot of kings, and other times there wasn't a darn thing. Walter and I, for a while there, we didn't catch hardly any fish at all. We were living off crackers and coffee and whatnot. Now, it was kind of tough for a while. Then when we ran into some fish over toward Orange Springs Bay, we happened to run into a bunch of fish there, and we load the boat up in one day.
Okay, well, now, how many fish would that amount to?
Oh, about between 60 and 70 fish. We had it plumb full then, because they were big fish.
Uh-huh, and this was hand lining.
No, this was power trolling with the boat. Yeah,
with this was you were on the boat. Was, you and your brother were both on the boat.
We were both on the boat. Yeah,
uh-huh.
We got a lot of fish that one day there.
And you were only running three lures to a side, then, right?
Yes, that's all. Three lures, yes.
And they must have just been hitting right away, huh?
Oh yes, we had some real nice fish.
Uh huh. How big were they? What kind of average would you have?
Oh, I'd say they were about a 30-pound average at the very least.
Oh man, those are big slugs.
Big slugs, yes.
Uh huh. Was it exciting when you came in?
It was really exciting when we came into Tyee there, when everybody said we had more fish than anybody. They were surprised as could be, because we were the greenhorns.
Uh-huh.
Everybody else was been fishing quite a few years already. So,
How was it when you got into the bite? Was it something when you pulled into the area, you could see that the fish were there? There were no fathometers or color sounders or anything.
No, there were no fathometers. You had to learn everything by, you know, hooking. Well, you had to just test the bottom, you know, drop down deeper and you hit the bottom. And then you raise the line up a fathom or two, and and you had the charts. You went by the old charts, you know. And
Russian
they
charts,
so,
right?
They weren't, well, no, they were American charts at that time. They were American charts, but they weren't so good, though. You had to be awful careful. And when you hit the bottom with a small boat with a 6-horsepower engine, you just pull the clutch and the boat would stop and you'd pull up the gear, you know.
Uh-huh.
You wouldn't lose anything that way because the boat. boat didn't have that much power, and you had the lines were pretty heavy, and you just pulled the clutch out and start pulling lines up.
Right, and then you made landmarks and remembered where the pinnacles were.
Well, that's what you had to do when you didn't have any fathom meters. That's what we all you had to learn everything by heart, you know.
It's really interesting fishing with my mother, and I know how to make landmarks because I grew up with her, but I've taken her out the last years. That's an art
that most of us
that use electronics and fathometers now don't really have, because she was fishing before they had fathometers too. And you must have that. That's a skill that's being lost in the modern fishing fleet.
Yes.
Just to look up and automatically make landmarks for where you are. Well, what kind of lures did you use for the king salmon back then?
We had some spoons.
Now, what kind of spoons? I mean, you retired, and that's a long time ago.
At that time, when I was fishing there in 27, they were mostly Superiors and Yeos and quite a few other spoons.
Uh-huh. Some of the same spoons that we use nowadays.
Yes, some of the same spoons we use nowadays. Uh-huh. And then those McMahons.
Uh-huh.
That was one of the best spoons they had at that time.
Some of the people that are listening are fishermen, but some people have never really caught a big king salmon, been in a bite when it's trolling, when it gets real exciting, when the fish are feeding voraciously. What's it like, Hap?
It's a lot of fun, is all I can say. You just get so doggone tired, you pull fish all day long, and when you get through in the evening, you're pooped out. But it's a lot of fun, though.
Uh-huh.
I've enjoyed every year of fishing.
This was back in, you've been telling us about 1927. Did you fish continuously after that, Hap?
Yes, I fished continuously. I fished every year after. When I started in 26, I fished for, between 64 and 65 years straight. I fished every single year.
Uh-huh. Well, back then, the seasons were open year-round.
Oh, they were open year-round.
Uh-huh. And there was really no limit on the number of lines or stuff, was there?
You had four lines most of the time, but there was no limit. You could have more if you wanted to, but at that time, they figured four lines was plenty, at that time.
Now, you were fishing in the 30s when there were hundreds of thousands of king salmon caught in southeast Alaska, weren't you?
Yes.
What was the abundance like back then compared to some of the later years after the king salmon got really depressed?
Well, up to about 1936, before 1936, you had all kinds of king salmon inside the same way as outside.
Big slugs, too.
Oh, there was a lot of fish. A lot of fish in Young's Bay at that time.
Young's Bay is right across from Juneau.
I fished there in the 30s and the 20s, and boy, it was really good fishing. But the fish weren't the same as out here. The fish were a lot bigger out here than they were inside.
Okay, when did you start moving out to fish on the coast, Hap?
Oh, I started about 1931. I started fishing on the coast.
Uh-huh. Where was that?
Outside of now Killeen Bay.
Uh-huh, right in Salisbury Sound.
Yeah, Salisbury Sound,
right up here. And there was a whole fleet of hand trollers fishing out of Killeen at that time. There was a little community.
They had some trolling boats, and then they had some hand trollers in there also.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's interesting. That's one of the places I started when I started hand trolling again in 1977. I fished out of Killeen Bay.
Yes.
Some in places like the Shark Hole and Sea Lion Rocks. And what was it like? Did you go out to Sea Lion? What kind of boat did you have when you started fishing there?
Same boat, the 26-footer.
Uh-huh. What was the name of that?
31A330.
you just had the number on it.
I had a number on it. That's all it had,
Uh-huh. Now, did you take that out to Sea Lion?
Yes. It was an excellent little sea boat. You couldn't get a little better boat than that little boat. It was just a wonderful sea boat.
Uh-huh. What was it like out there? Were there just more fish out on the coast?
Well, there was a bigger fish out here than inside.
Uh-huh.
And there was more fish out here than there was inside.
Uh-huh. And was it just steady? You'd go out and catch 20 or 30 a day?
Oh, yes. You got 20 or 30 a day, yes.
Uh-huh. And big slugs?
And I came over here and visited for a while in Sitka. Then we went back out again, my brother and I, Walter and I.
And so you started fishing on the coast out of Killeen. And now you also moved up the coast and fish off of Yokobi Island quite a bit, didn't you?
I fished a lot up at Yokobi Island, yes.
Uh-huh.
I did real good.
Uh-huh. Now, where was it you fished up there?
At Deer Harbor.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Now, tell us about Deer Harbor when that came.
Deer Harbor had about three scows in there.
Uh-huh.
Moy had a scow in there, and then now Pelican had a scow in there. That was Roddykainen's scow. And then there was Stanley Thompson had a scow in there also.
Uh-huh. Well, part of the thing you did back in those days, you just lived out of these places, didn't you?
We lived out of these places.
For several months. When did you start fishing?
We stayed there for a couple of months, We'd just stay right in Deer Harbor and then fish out of there.
Uh-huh. Now, when would you leave Juneau? Would you start fishing in the spring, or did you fish all year round?
Well, I fished I fished most of the year. Mm-hmm. I fished sometime until December, you know.
Uh-huh. And then you'd start again in March
yes,
or April?
March or April, I'd start again.
Uh-huh. And when would you move out to the coast, usually?
Oh, we moved out usually in about June.
I see.
Because it seemed like there was nothing out there until about June.
I see.
Not very much. We sometime went out early in May, but it uh-huh. wasn't very good. And when I went out there, I already had the Ace. I bought the Ace in 1937.
Now, the Ace is still in Sitka.
It's still in Sitka, yes.
Uh-huh. And you had it for years, didn't you?
I had it for about 7 years.
You had the Ace for 7 years, mm-hmm. and it was a real good fishing boat, wasn't
it? It was a good fishing boat. It was smooth. It was real smooth in the water, and I put a Chrysler Crown in there. At first, I had a heavy-duty engine there, a three-cylinder Imperial in there, Atlas Imperial. And that would chug and make such much noise that scared the fish. When I was fishing, if I fished 30, 40 fathoms, I'd get quite a few fish. But when the fish got shallow, up to 10, 20 fathoms, then it wouldn't fish very good. I got very few fish, you know. So I got rid of the doggone heavy-duty engine, and I bought myself a Chrysler Crown. That was in Juneau. I bought the Chrysler uh-huh. Crown from Charlie Warner, and it cost $700 at that time. And that's... Coming spring, I had the biggest year I ever had in my life.
Uh-huh. How many fish would that be now?
Oh, I had 60,000 pounds of mahlcure for that year. 60,000, just imagine what 60,000 pounds of mahlcure. I sold 50,000 pounds to Rautikainen in Deer Harbor.
60,000 pounds of mahlcure would
yes.
be, that's at 20 pounds, that would be...
Sure, they were 22-pound average.
3,000 king salmon?
Yes.
3,000 king salmon, plus you caught a lot of cohos. And
yes, cohos.
What kind of prices were you getting back in those
days?
Well,
we got 12 cents a pound for mahlcure in 42, and now 8 cents a pound for mediums, and 4 cents a pound for white. That's all you got.
Boy, it's a difference now.
Yes.
One of the really sad things about trolling is, of course, when the dams went in on the Columbia River
oh, yes.
and stuff, you must have seen almost an immediate decline up here, didn't you?
Well, you saw a decline, yes.
Uh-huh.
But 42 was the best year I ever seen up here. I have seen some good fishing, but 42 was the best year. All along the coast here was the same way.
Right.
All the way from Sitka, all the way to,
and when
to
those,
Elfin Cove.
Those fish got back to Grand Coulee, there was no ladder.
That's right. There was no ladder at that time.
Yeah, and a lot of those fish were really big fish, weren't they?
They were real big fish, yes.
Uh-huh. That's exciting.
Yeah.
We've only got a couple minutes here, but the fishery has really changed, hasn't it?
It sure has, yes.
And it's, how do you feel about the young guys entering the fishery
well,
now?
I think it's all right if you're going to have four or five different types of gear, you know, you could make a living, but...
You mean
you
like longlining
yeah,
and trolling and diving, and you just got to be involved
and crab
in
fishing and everything else,
right.
You know, halibut fishing and black cod fishing. You could make a living that way, but when you try to troll by yourself nowadays, I think it's a losing proposition.
Right, it's just gone.
Yes, it is.
But it was great, wasn't it, being out there in your own boat?
It sure was, yeah. My wife fished with me for you, Lorraine. She fished with me for 23 years straight.
Uh-huh. What a great life, out in the boat,
yeah.
chasing the fish,
yeah.
and reading
I had
the
my
water.
Daughter, when I fished out at Fairweather Grounds, I had my daughter with me. Her name was Linda,
uh-huh.
and she was only 16 years old when I taught her how to fish. And by the way, in a little while, she was as good as I was, handling fish. But she never cleaned any fish. I didn't. Nobody ever, none of my family ever cleaned the fish. I cleaned the fish myself.
You cleaned them and ran the boat,
oh,
and they
yes.
iced them and
yeah.
took care of the cooking and...
Well, I iced the fish, but they didn't ice the fish. They just hand them down to me, and I iced the fish.
You know, that's one of the neat things
yeah.
I see. It's such a family operation,
yeah.
and every family seems to handle it a little different.
Oh,
like
yes.
my mother never cleaned or iced any fish, but she was great at running the boat.
Well, my wife, she didn't ice any fish or clean any fish. I cleaned every one. I let her clean one fish, and I said, "What's the matter? I'm taking you so doggone long." And she says, "Well, she said you try to clean with your left hand. See how you can do." And of course, I'm right-handed. But she did all right handling the fish. She did pretty good. She couldn't handle the big kings. They'd give them to me, and then I'd take care of them and bring them aboard the boat.
Yeah. Well, Hap,
we've
run out of time. I really appreciate having you on Fin and Feather to talk about
that's okay,
trolling
yeah.
and the great king salmon. What a remarkable species, isn't it?
It sure is, yes.
I was thinking of that when I caught that nice one yesterday. This has been Fin and Feather. My name's Eric Jordan. My special guest tonight has been Hap Savico, and we've been talking about the history of the trolling industry from a fisherman's standpoint.
Yeah. Well, I could tell you a lot of stuff about you.